Hello, Gallatin Valley. You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. On our last show, we interviewed three LGBTQ activist guests, a trans woman, a trans man, and a cisgender ally, about what the historic U.S. Supreme Court decision protecting LGBTQ employees from discrimination on the job means. We also talked about work that remains to be done to protect LGBTQ people from prejudice and discrimination to help make sure everyone can lead a fulfilling life, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. We'll be carrying on with that theme today. In this first half hour, we'll be talking with the Reverend D. Gregory Smith, who is an assisting priest at St. James Episcopal Church here in Bozeman and is an openly gay man. He's also a licensed mental health counselor who trained at the Seattle Counseling Service for Sexual Minorities. Joining Greg is Ellis, part of the LGBTQ plus community who has experienced firsthand the trauma of conversion therapy. Greg, could you please start by describing for us the population you tend to work with in your counseling practice?
Certainly. The population that I work with most often is probably young gay men. But I also have quite a few transgender persons on my caseload. And I also see some people who are working through relationships and may not be traditional relationships. So I basically I'll talk to anybody, but what I love to do is kind of help people through coming out and maybe fitting in here in Montana, like just by being a resource and a place for people to express their anxieties and maybe help them adjust to a new life or a different life or just getting used to who they are. You know, when people come out, it's like there's quite an adjustment period. And so it's my privilege to be able to sit with people while we're working through that. And I sort of look at my job as a therapist as helping people to live at ease in the world as themselves. And so I do that from a couple points of view. One is my religious point of view. I believe in the dignity of every human being. And that's how God created us. And I also think that a lot of times people don't know where to go or who to go to. So try to create a community in Bozeman, especially in the Gallatin Valley, of therapists who are really, they're very skilled and experienced at working with LGBTQ people. So we actually have a transgender man who is a therapist now in Bozeman, and I help train him. And that's just been a boon. Because I love working with trans people, but I'm not trans. And so being able to have somebody in town who is and who can offer that kind of consistent support, it's just been really helpful.
Well, thank you for your work. And being at peace with ourselves is something all of us would want. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ellis, I understand that you were forced out of your home as a result of being queer. What was that like? What happened?
Yeah. First of all, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, that was definitely a challenging experience, but I am a much stronger person because of it. I get more context when we discuss my experience with conversion therapy, but essentially when I was 18, my parents asked me to return to conversion therapy. And when I did not want to, I was, forced in a bind of either denying myself and continuing to therapy that I knew had damaged me and had harmful effects and was ineffective, or to leave what I called my home. And that was unfortunately a choice I had to make as a young person. But it led me on a path of growth and made me a much stronger person in the end of it all.
Actually, why don't we jump in and hear from you about your experience with conversion therapy?
Yeah. So I grew up in a very traditional Roman Catholic family. I'm the youngest of seven. I was homeschooled K through 12, like all of my older siblings. And at the age of 12, when I told my parents I had an attraction to men, I was driven to Idaho and worked with a priest who performed prayers of exorcism on me and kind of started this path. Frequent check-ins with my parents in my early teen years as to whether the whole gay thing was solved or not, led to an answer they weren't happy with. And when I was 16, we decided to, take it a step further. And my mom found a conversion therapist. We weren't able to find one locally in Bozeman that met my mom's standards of like conversion therapy from a Catholic perspective. So I was actually doing it once a week for just under 2 years via Skype with a therapist. I don't want to use that term, too literally, but a conversion therapist who was based out of California, practicing on minors in states that allowed that because California has a ban on minors being subjected to conversion therapy.
Here in Montana, it is still legal to subject minors to conversion therapy, correct?
Yep. Like I said, there's thankfully not a plethora of conversion therapists, but I mean, that's also maybe incorrect. And, based off of my perspective, my parents had a pretty high standard for the type they wanted me to be doing. But yes, in the state of Montana and in, I believe, about 30 other states, conversion therapy is still legal to be practiced on minors.
It's hard for me to believe that actual licensed therapists are still doing this, because my understanding is that the American Psychological Association is like completely opposed to this. But let's go on and hear more about what that experience, that weekly Skype for 2 years, what was that like for you?
Yeah. So for some context, essentially within the vein of belief that this therapist and my parents were operating within, they believed that same-sex attraction was caused by an absent father and an overbearing mother. When you hit puberty, you sexualize that desire for masculinity that you're not getting from your father, and you reject the femininity that you're not getting from your mother. So the conversion therapy I was doing was using legitimate therapy, practices, EMDR, to work through traumatic, I use air quotes there, memories in regards to your father not being present or your mother being overbearing, and work through those in a way that fits their agenda. At the time, being a, sheltered, susceptible, hell-fearing kid, I bought into it and was able to see how there were certain parallels in my life. But unlike therapy that I now experience as an adult, where the therapist is there to guide you making your own discoveries and helping you understand your own traumas, I was being told, you are gay because you have experienced trauma. This is what that trauma looks like. What experiences have you had that look like that? And I kind of became this process of just creating trauma and creating memories that fit this narrative, learning to blame and despise my parents really for having caused such a horrible thing as homosexuality in my life. And every single week thinking about a memory, whether it was legitimately upsetting to me or not, from a trauma list we built, and slowly using EMDR to, quote, fix that. That process, initially, I think, to some extent, was helpful in just identifying negative relationship dynamics I had with my parents. But as I said, with like an agenda going into therapy, you're not going to find real and solutions that are unique to your situation.
You're listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM. Today, we're talking about what work remains to be done to protect LGBTQ people from prejudice and discrimination. Our guests are Greg Smith and Ellis. Ellis, you were telling us about your experience with conversion therapy, the pros and cons, mostly cons. And so you were doing this Skyping with this therapist who was practicing conversion therapy on you in a state where it is legal. So this went on for 2 years. And then how did you come to stopping that 2 year period? What happened there?
So essentially, as I mentioned, we had this massive trauma list we built. It honestly took us like a month of therapy just to come up with all of the things that made me gay that we need to work through. And as I was about, you know, halfway through them, that's when the therapist started telling me that I should be seeing results and that I should be, you know, feeling my attractions changing and feeling this masculinity just seeping into my being because I was working, you know, doing the legwork. And when that wasn't really happening, there was definitely kind of a process, I mean, all throughout, but of, you know, faking it till you make it was essentially what I was told. So it was a process of changing how I spoke, changing how I acted, constantly policing my own gender with the guidance of a therapist as we're also working through these memories to be more manly. And I mean, it wasn't working. A year and a half into it, still felt the same attractions, if not stronger, as I was, you know, maturing. And I just began to feel a ton of hopelessness. When you're presented a solution and it's not working for you, it deepens the negative beliefs you have about yourself already. And so I definitely started to kind of slip into a very, very dark place. There was a lot of guilt because I knew that my parents were paying a lot of money out of pocket for this therapy that, thank God, wasn't covered by our health insurance. And I was being told I should be seeing changes and I wasn't. And I just kind of decided I was going to do the fake it till you make it thing forever and just stop torturing myself, stop making myself think about it every day. I would just make my sexuality something I didn't ever think about, put it in a box and hide it in a closet. And so I just started pretending it was working, and I did so in a way that seemed natural and organic so that my parents and my therapist would believe it and drop it, essentially. And I just began focusing on other aspects of my mental health in a, you know, private, not guided by a therapist way to try and bring myself out of this mega, mega depression and, you know, just mental state I found myself in.
So then what happened that your parents decided you had to go back to therapy?
Yeah, so I was in conversion therapy essentially from a little bit of after 16 until within a month of graduating high school. And I attended MSU University. As I mentioned, I was homeschooled and extremely sheltered. My parents were very good at keeping friends that had similar ideologies and whatnot. And I didn't have a bunch of exposure to outside ideologies. And as I attended university and made friends that had different perspectives from me and met people of different experiences, I started to realize how messed up and how damaging my, you know, beliefs about my own gender identity and my family's beliefs about my gender identity had been. And so I kind of began to slowly and privately, you know, dip my toe into accepting my identity and dating a little bit and being out to my friends. And just before Christmas, it was 10 days before Christmas, actually. I remember I had gone on a run and I was wearing joggers with like a Nordic snowflake pattern on them that my mom apparently thought was too effeminate. She clocked me for it and pulled me aside and asked me if I was still struggling because I had seemed to be dressing really weirdly, which in Catholic coded language just means I wasn't wearing Fruit of the Loom and Carhartt jeans. But I, at this point, did not want to continue lying. I had found the relief of just being myself and not lying to my parents by experimenting with, you know, honesty with my friends. And I was not wanting to continue that process again. And I was just kind of sitting there silent as my mom was bringing up all of her concerns and what we could be doing and possible solutions. And when we got to, I'm going to call your therapist, like, we'll get you started again. And I said, I, you know, don't think I want to go back to therapy. It doesn't work. That led to a very, very big blow up conversation with all of my parents, you know, all of my family really that was at the house. And kind of in a, I believe, a last ditch effort, they were assuming I didn't have anywhere else to go. You know, they presented me with that bind of, well, if those are your beliefs and that's how you feel, you can't, you know, practice that lifestyle under our house. You can't believe those things. And you can't stay here. And I grabbed a few of my belongings and left my house after my, you know, dad blew up at me and threw belongings in my car that he had found to kind of corroborate the whole gay thing at me, saying I would need them when I left. And that was a really, really rough night, but I'm super, super thankful that my aunt was very understanding and loving and took me in essentially as her own and gave me a place to stay and the support and familial love I needed to heal from that experience.
Thank goodness for cool aunts.
Right? Yeah, no, she's my hero. I love her to death. But yeah, and then, I mean, I would like to say that that was the end of my experience with conversion therapy, and I went on to be perfectly happy and healthy and everything was great. But I, you know, it's taken a lot of work and time and healing to undo the damaging effects of conversion therapy and my upbringing generally, to get into a good place. And that was a really long road that involved substance abuse and just a lot of really, really dark, dark rock bottoms for me. But I'm thankful 5 years later I feel like be on the cusp of finally kind of being, you know, at peace and healing and coming to terms with those experiences.
I'm thankful too. This is Body Politic. You're listening to KGVM Bozeman 95.9. Today we are speaking with Ellis and with Greg Smith. Greg, I would like to ask you, you also grew up in Montana. You grew up in very small town Montana, also in a Catholic home, I believe. Could you please talk to us about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
Well, I'm 55. Do we have enough time for that?
Absolutely. Maybe we could, like, you know, the Cliff Notes.
I'll abbreviate it, but yeah. Sure. No, I grew up in Twin Bridges, Montana, in a class of 20, pretty much kindergarten through high school. And I remember I had this group of friends when I was 7, and we had a tree fort. And one of my friends had brought his dad's Playboy magazines to mm-hmm. the tree fort, and all my friends were just like, oh my god, that's amazing, look at her, woo-hoo. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, she's pretty, I don't get it. And then they had a Penthouse magazine that had a guy in it, and I was like, got really excited about seeing this naked man, and I thought, oh crap, this is bad. And so that just sort of started my hiding of that part of my identity and not really feeling comfortable, because, you know, I was in a Catholic home and I knew that this was not good and that our society, you know, this is in the 70s, basically. And I had no role models. I had nobody to tell me that life would be okay, that I could still be myself and have these feelings and thoughts and not be ashamed of them. And so I sort of created a plan for my life that I would be a priest, a Catholic priest. I'd be celibate. No one would ever wonder why I didn't marry a woman, and I could help people. And it was not a bad plan. I mean, I went to seminary in Rome. I saw the world. I've, you know, was working as a priest in Helena for years after that when I got really depressed. And I went to a therapist who's still my friend today. And she helped me kind of navigate that whole thing. And it ended up with me taking a leave of absence from the church and moving to Seattle and staying with one of my best friends from college and kind of exploring my identity. Got another therapist in Seattle, and he had such a great effect on me. Like he was the one who suggested that I look into therapy as a career because, as he said, he goes, I'm not really doing much here. You're doing all the work. And he's like, you probably could be good at this. So I did that, and I went to Seattle University for my master's in counseling and worked at Seattle Counseling Service for Sexual Minorities for 8 years, and really got trained with all the breadth that LGBTQ plus people have to offer. And I remember specifically, I had never met a transgender person before. And the clinical director called me into his office one day and he said, now I'm giving you this person and they're transgender. And I was like, I don't know anything about transgender people. What am I going to do with them? I was like, I'm probably going to screw this up. But he said something that I take to heart every time I meet with somebody. Let them teach you who they are. Hmm. Let them teach you who they are. And it's pretty much the philosophy I work with today. But I didn't feel safe here when I left in 97. And I needed to go somewhere safe. And Seattle seemed safe. It was much safer. But I also, I'm HIV positive also, and I had to come back to Montana for my health, and my parents were taking care of me, and I was really sick for a while. But I got back to Montana, and I thought, what am I doing here? I think I need a mission. And so in the background of my mind, my mission was always to help kids or people who wanted to stay here feel safe. Because I love it here. I don't always feel safe here, but my goal is to help everybody feel as safe as they can be by accepting who they are and that it's not bad. And, you know, from a religious perspective, I've been like this for as long as I can remember. I've had same-sex attraction. And, you know, I'm happily married today with two dogs and a house. And
and you found sort of a new spiritual home, right, with the Episcopal Church?
I have, yeah. Thanks to you, I met Gene Robinson, the first gay bishop in the world, openly gay. And I got to pal around with him for like 2.5-3 days, I think it was.
That was so cool.
We got to be really good friends. We talk a lot still. And he said to me, now, when you go back to Bozeman, you go to an Episcopal church and you see what you think. Because if you want to be a priest again, you could do it openly as who you are. And I did, and I loved it, and I'm still there. And St. James is just a really important part of my life today.
This story really makes me smile. I'm so glad.
Yeah, it's a good story.
We only have a few more minutes. I would like to talk with you all a little bit about, for people who may be listening, what resources are there for LGBTQ plus people in this community? And Greg, I want to start with, do you encourage people to reach out to you if they want? How can they find you as a counselor?
Yeah, at this point, I have a waiting list for people.
Okay.
because the work is so it's so demanded right now, and people are really looking. I think that the COVID thing has made all of us a little bit more reflective than we normally would be.
Mm-hmm.
And but yes, I am happy to refer people if people reach out to me, I'm happy to tell them and send them to resources or to other therapists that I trust. I've also been working with families across the state of Montana to take in kids who are forced from their home. So, and I do that with the assistance of Quinn Layton, the Pride Foundation coordinator for the state of Montana. So if a kid is forced from their home, they can be in touch with me or with Pride Foundation, and we will find them a safe place to be.
Yeah. So, I will touch briefly. I mean, unfortunately, like most places, I don't think there are enough resources. But locally, you know, therapy is always a great resource. There are also organizations for community. You know, community can't solve all problems, but organizations like the QSA, drag shows by nonprofits like the Countship of the Imperial Sovereign Court of the State of Montana, that's a mouthful, are great places to find, you know, queer community in Bozeman. But on, you know, kind of a broader scale, a resource that was really, really helpful to me as someone that had just come out and, you know, I had my aunt, but not much else at that point, was the Trevor Project. And so the Trevor Project is a national hotline. Anyone can call them at any point in time, 24 hours a day, and they have staff specifically trained to handle LGBTQ issues, and they're just someone to listen to what you're saying. And in rural areas like Montana, like oftentimes resources like the Trevor Project are all that people have. I really, really trust the Trevor Project, and I have had great experiences, but past that, like specifically with conversion therapy, they are so keyed in and active in the fight against conversion therapy, especially on minors. They are leading the largest LGBTQ like legal movement at the moment, which is called 50 Bills, 50 States. And it's an attempt to pass a bill in all 50 states banning conversion therapy on minors. It's interesting because they're actually pretty efficiently doing that through false advertising lawsuits, essentially. Conversion therapy doesn't work. Statistically, it doesn't work. And they're able to save a lot of kids from going through it by pointing out that fact and how it's marketed and offered. Sorry, a little rambly there, but the Trevor Project, great resource for anyone experiencing conversion therapy or just generally any type of trauma issue, discrimination, etc., that needs someone to listen to them wholeheartedly.
Good to know. And I didn't know about the 50 States, 50 Bills movement. I'm going to look that up. Ellis, what was the most damaging part of conversion therapy for you?
For me, I think past the personal repercussions, the most damaging part of conversion therapy is that the lie it tells just tears family apart. And by that, I mean, the lie I was being fed is that I was gay, not because I was born that way or unrelated environmental factors in my upbringing, but purely because my parents had failed as parents. And so it just tears the family apart because the parents are left with no position but to admit that they were terrible, awful people, which in my case was not true. My parents were lovely and provided for me, save these few areas. But then it also just teaches a child to disdain their parents for ruining their life by causing them to be gay. And that lie that people experience non-heterosexual attraction because of a failure on their parents' part in raising them and nurturing them is to this day the most damaging lasting effect of conversion therapy for me and my family.
You have been listening to an interview with Ellis, who shared their story of firsthand experience with conversion therapy, and with Dee Gregory Smith, a licensed mental health professional and assisting priest at St. James Episcopal Church. Join us in the next half hour when we talk with more members of the LGBTQ community about what work remains to be done to protect community members from prejudice and discrimination. This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM. Ellis and Greg, thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.